of the entire Middle East,
sure,
in the same way that they've used Taiwan against China.
Indeed.
In the same way that they've used Ukraine against Russia. They
thank you for
prop
that.
Up a state for their own
thank you for
corporate
that.
Benefit right here.
Thank
and
you.
It is using and trying to destroy an
thanks.
Entire people for their profit.
Sorry, Sarah Flanders, fresh out of time, International Action Center. Vincent James, thank you. Podcaster and founder, Daily Vivacity from L.A. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikko Vitale and the team, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa idh qala Ibrahim Rabbi arini kayfa tuhyi al-mauta qala awalam tu'min qala bala walakin liyatma'inna qalbi قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. And when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening. And know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran condemns as irresponsible and unconstructive U.S. vetoed Security Council resolution calling for full Palestine membership of the United Nations. Death toll from U.S.-Israeli onslaught on Gaza has surpassed 34,000, most of those killed, women and children. And Iraqi officials say the Qasu military base in Babylon province has come under attack. And our condemnations continue pouring in after the United States vetoes a Security Council resolution calling for full Palestine membership at the United Nations. Iran and Syria are just the latest countries to denounce the move. Iran's foreign ministry described it as irresponsible and unconstructive. Spokesman Nasser Kanani said the vote exposes the hypocritical nature of Washington's foreign policy. He added U.S. is isolated in its stance at the Security Council. Syria also condemned the veto. The country's foreign ministry said it shows Washington's blind bias in Israel's favor. The U.S. is the only nation in the 15-member U.N. Security Council to vote against the resolution. 12 council members backed the measure, while Britain and Switzerland abstained. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi has hailed this country's recent attack on Israeli targets as a great honor that shows the strength of the Islamic Republic and the power of its armed forces. Raisi said the Operation True Promise is a necessary response to Israel's strike on the Iranian embassy in Syria earlier this month. He said the operation also enhanced Iranian unity. The president made the comments as he addressed people in the city of Damghan during a provincial trip. In Tehran, the commander of the Iranian army's ground force, Brigadier General Qumar Sayedi, said the armed forces successfully punished Israel in the retaliatory strike. He was addressing worshippers during weekly Friday prayers in Tehran. Commander stressed the operation shows how empty and fake Israeli claims of military prowess are. Haydari said the True Promise operation shifted the equation in West Asia in Iran's favor. We're back to our top story, where condemnations are pouring in after the U.S. vetoes Security Council resolution calling for a full U.N. membership for Palestine. Iran and Syria are just the latest countries to denounce the move. Joining us now is Mohsen Saleh, academic and political commentator, joining us out of Beirut for more on the story. Hello, Mr. Saleh. Your thoughts about the U.S. vetoing an opportunity for Palestine to finally take a step towards achieving freedom, liberation, and a sense of sovereignty.
Of course, it's well known historically that the United States backed this usurpation in Palestine and defend Israel in all places and sustain them and help them in all means. So it's not surprising to find this veto in the UN, because the US hypocritically talks something to the Arabs, and of course simply they denounce the Palestinians who try to liberate themselves or to try to self independence in Palestine, even in Gaza and West Bank. So we are talking here about this access of the Americans, some of the Arabs, and of course the Israelis and the United States. So we have here this equation that we have the access of resistance and we have this the Americans who ask the Arabs or the Palestinians to coordinate with the Israelis. The Israelis, Netanyahu, refused any kind of state, of Palestinian states. On the contrary, he and Ben-Gvir and all these extremists, the terrorists actually, the new Nazis of these Zionists, I guess they want to kick out the Palestinians out of the land, like what they have done in the 40s from the last century. So we are talking about American conspiracy against the Palestinians. And these naive Arabs who believe the United States, that the United States will back a Palestinian independent state, I guess they are living in what kind of mentality, I don't know. But it's actually, this is America, this is the United States who want to help and give everything for these people in Palestine. Not only the Zionists, I guess. There is a lot of pressure on the American administration and, of course, on the Arabs in order to accept the massacres, accept the kinds of sabotaging everything in Palestine, in Gaza, and in West Bank. So they won't accept these people anymore. That's why I guess all these people who accept the Americans' pretexts or any kinds of saying, I guess they are still under the pressure of this American power.
Right. Thank you. Pleasure to have you on our bulletin here from Beirut, Mohsen Saleh, academic and political commentator. Meanwhile, the Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi has hailed his country's recent attack on Israeli targets as a great honor that shows the strength of the Islamic Republic and power of its armed forces. Raisi said Operation True Promise was a necessary response to Israel's strike on the Iranian embassy in Syria earlier this month. He said Operation also enhanced unity in Iran. The President made comments as he addressed people in the city of Damghan during a provincial trip. In Tehran, commander of the Iranian Army's ground force, Brigadier General Qumash Haydadi, said that armed forces successfully punished Israel in their retaliatory strike. He was addressing worshippers during weekly Friday prayers in Tehran. The commander stressed the operation shows how empty and fake Israeli claims of military prowess are. Haydadi said the Operation True Promise shifted the equation in West Asia in favor of Iran. Iran's army says explosions heard in Isfahan earlier Friday are due to activation of air defenses in the central Iranian city. Army Chief Commander Major General Abdulrahim Mousavi said air defenses in Isfahan fired at suspicious objects. He said no damage was caused, and earlier informed sources said that Iran's air defenses shot down 3 quadcopters over Isfahan. They said no foreign attack took place and no incident occurred at any military or nuclear site either. The International Atomic Energy Agency also confirmed there's been no damage to Iran nuclear facilities. Meanwhile, Iran Civil Aviation Organization said all airports throughout the country are functioning back to normal after flights were temporarily suspended. Latest development comes amid Israel's threats to strike Iran in response to weekend attack on Israeli targets. An Israeli far-right minister has drawn strong criticism for posting the word lame on social media platform X after regime's alleged operation inside Iran. Israeli opposition leader Yair Lapid said posts by war cabinet member Ben-Gvir has done some heavy damage to Israel's security, its image, and international status. Lapid says that Ben-Gvir managed to get Israel mocked and shamed all the way from Tehran to Washington. Also, Israeli media quoted unnamed officials close to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, slamming the minister's comment as childish and irrelevant. On Friday, Iran's army said the air defenses in the central city of Isfahan fired at suspicious objects. However, no damage was reported. Israel's launched fresh airstrikes in the city of Rafah in the southern Gaza Strip, killing at least 7 people. According to Palestinian media, most of the victims are women and children. Death toll is likely to rise due to a number of seriously wounded people. The attack hit a Tel al-Sultan neighborhood in Rafah, and it comes as the Israeli military is preparing evacuation plans for the city in anticipation of a ground offensive. The United Nations and many other countries have expressed grave concerns over this offensive. The city is home to approximately 1.5 million displaced Palestinians. Joining us now for an update from the besieged Gaza Strip is our correspondent there in the central city of Deir al-Balah, Moti Abu Musabeh. Hello, Moti. Good morning. Hope you're safe and doing well out there. What can you tell us?
Yes, actually, the Israeli occupation forces scaled up their airstrikes and attacks against multiple areas in the Gaza Strip, and this began from Rafah City, whereas the Israeli occupation forces committed an alarming massacre against the Palestinian civilians there after the Israeli war planes carried out an airstrike against a residential apartment in Tel al-Sultan neighborhood, which is known as one of the most densely populated neighborhoods and squares in Rafah City. At least 10 Palestinian civilians, including 6 children and women, were reportedly and tragically killed and murdered over the attack. In the meantime, more Israeli airstrikes hit the sporadic areas in the same city, while the western parts and the coastal parts of the city were subjected to heavy gunfire of the Israeli military boats. While when it comes to Khan Yunis city, particularly the surrounding areas of Al-Mawasi area, they were subjected to multiple Israeli airstrikes, knowing that Al-Mawasi also is completely overcrowded with the displaced Palestinians who have been displaced from different areas in Gaza City and the northern part of Gaza Strip, and they are crammed in that area. The Israeli occupation forces repeatedly attacked that area, leaving and causing more death and more Palestinian civilians being killed in that area. Here in the central area of Gaza Strip, particularly the northern part of Nusayr refugee camp, an entire residential building was completely targeted and destroyed by the relentless Israeli airstrikes, knowing that the northern part of Nusayr refugee camp was subjected to a brutal ground offensive over the last couple of weeks after the Israeli occupation forces carried out that attack against the northern part of Nusayr refugee camp, destroying hundreds of the Palestinian residential buildings and the Palestinian houses and killing hundreds of the Palestinian civilians there. The last night was horrific for that area because the Israeli airstrikes were maintained. In addition to that, the chronic IOF and the chronic Israeli artillery shelling was also maintained intensely against that area. While when it comes to Gaza City, the Israeli occupation forces also intensified their attacks against the center of the city. In the meantime, the southern part of Az-Zaytun neighborhood also was hit relentlessly, unabated by the Israeli airstrikes. So we are talking about continuous and chronic Israeli airstrikes. These airstrikes and these attacks actually over the last couple of days are intensified against Rafah City particularly. These attacks actually are carried out amid the rising concerns and fears that the Israeli occupation forces are going to carry out a ground offensive against Rafah City, the city that is still accepting 1.5 million Palestinian civilians. They are still living catastrophic humanitarian conditions, and they have no place to go. I mean, that would be a real catastrophe for the Palestinian people to be subjected to a ground offensive in Rafah City.
And the world, the whole world, Moti, continues telling Tel Aviv not to go through with the so-called imminent ground offensive. We're out of time, Moti. I want to check in with you later, but thank you for that update. Moti Abu Musaba joining us from Deir Abala. Meanwhile, the Islamic resistance in Iraq says it's fired drones at an Israeli position in occupied territories following an early morning attack on an Iraqi military base. Umbrella group of Iraqi resistance factions has released a video of its attack saying targeted a key location in occupied port city of Eilat. The strike followed a drone attack on an Iraqi military base in Babylon province. Base is jointly used by the Iraqi resistance group known as the Popular Mobilization Units, or the PMU, and the Iraqi Federal Police and the Army. Some Iraqi officials have blamed the pre-dawn attack on Israel, although PMU's statement says U.S. is behind this incident. According to a chief security official in Babylon province, there were five explosions at the base, leaving at least one person dead and several others injured. And joining us from Baghdad is Muslim Salim to get the latest on this attack, on this base and the repercussions of it. Hello, Muslim. Thanks for checking with us. What do we know at this point?
We know that early hours of today, a military base used by Popular Mobilization Forces jointly with the Iraqi military was struck multiple times, leaving on several ones, and one of them unfortunately confirmed to be dead. The Popular Mobilization Forces directly sent a team of investigators to investigate the nature of the attack and who's responsible behind it. Media sources from the U.S. denied any involvement of the U.S. military in operations in the area, while others suspecting Israel to be responsible for the attack. Now, the suspicion comes at its place, since the Iraqi resistance have been successfully directing Israel directly, and it has previously warned the U.S. and Israel not to conduct any foolish acts or operations in Iraq, or else the response will be directly to the Israeli areas, and it showed that it has the capability to strike Israel and its occupied territories. Thus, the Iraqi resistance responded in early hours of the dawn, striking Eilat in a vital target with a drone strike. Now, this comes within in accordance with the Iraqi Prime Minister's visit to Washington. We all know that the Iraqi Prime Minister is in Washington conducting, a conversation with the U.S. and its withdrawal from Iraq. So this escalation comes in a very sensitive time to Iraq and its security forces, especially when you're attacking Popular Mobilization Forces, forces that known to fight Daesh, and it has its role in the fight against terror. So any type of attack on such forces will open up a gate to destabilize the security scene in Iraq, unfortunately.
Muslim Salim there joining us for that update from the Iraqi capital, Baghdad. If you hear us, Muslim, thank you for that report and update. Thanks for joining us, and goodbye for now.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
the supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O the Most Merciful.
The limelight.
While the Zionists are huffing and puffing, if they make the mistake of attacking Iran again, there will be a very heavy price to pay. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Crescent International wrote, Islamic Republic of Iran's retaliatory strike on Israel, launched on April 30th night, has left the genocidal Zionist shell-shocked. Regardless of the spin they put on it, there were no casualties and there was minor damage to the Nevatim airbase. The fact that is that Iran penetrated its air defenses and struck where it wanted. Iran announced ahead of time its intention to retaliate for the Zionist regime's attack on its consulate at its embassy in Damascus. This led some ill-informed observers to allege that Tehran was not serious. Further, that even when Iran launched its drones, it announced doing so in advance. Iran's Shahed-136 drone is a slow-moving aerial vehicle that makes a distinctive humming noise. This increased the skepticism of those who had already convinced themselves that Iran was only putting up a show. After all, why announce your plans ahead of time to give your enemy the time to prepare? The world saw that the Zionist regime's Western backers, including the US, Britain, and France, as well as two bit player, the British-installed Jordanian monarchy, all came to Israel's defense. By the time the drones reached Israeli air defense, Western Air Force planes were ready to take them out. The Zionist regime also activated its much-vaunted $1 billion Iron Dome. Iran's Shahed 136 drone cost $20,000. Every missile fired from the Iron Dome or any other air defense platform costs $1 million plus. In terms of direct costs alone, the Zionist regime and its backers had to spend $1 million to take out a single $20,000 drone. The Zionist regime's cost in air defense has been estimated at over $1.35 billion. This amount does not take into account the loss suffered as a result of closure of its airspace, disruption to its economy, and other associated costs. Iran's next wave of strikes consisted of cruise missiles that are designed to release multiple dummy missiles to set the Iron Dome missiles on a wild chase. These multiple missiles are actually decoys meant to confuse and overwhelm the Iron Dome or other systems like David's sling. This is exactly what happened. While Israel's U.S.-supplied Iron Dome was chasing the decoys, Iran launched another salvo of hypersonic missiles that struck the Israeli airbase at Nevatim in the south. Iran has said 20 missiles struck this airbase, causing extensive damage. The Zionist regime's military spokesperson, Daniel Hagari, admitted that some missiles got through but caused light structural damage. How he quantified light structural damage was not explained, but there was admission that some missiles did go through. These missiles, believed to be the Fatah hypersonic missiles, sent an important message. No place in Israel is safe from Iran's precision missiles. If Iran had wanted, it could have hit the bunker in Tel Aviv, where Netanyahu was hiding during the retaliatory strike. So why strike the Nevatim airbase in particular? It was from this base that the Zionist regime had launched its U.S.-supplied F-35 planes, whose missiles destroyed Iran's consulate in Damascus, in which seven Iranian Revolutionary Guard commanders were murdered. Two of them were generals, Mohammad Reza Zahedi and his deputy general, Mohammad Hadi Haji Rahimi. General Zahedi was the commander of Revolutionary Guards forces in Syria and Lebanon. Iran also struck the Ramon Air Base in the Negev, as well as another military base on the illegally occupied Golan Heights. Following the Zionist regime's April 1st attack on Iran's consulate in Damascus, Tehran still opted for the diplomatic route. It urged the UN Security Council to condemn Israel's attack on its consulate, which was in flagrant violation of the Vienna Convention guaranteeing protection to diplomatic missions. Diplomatic missions are considered the country's territory. So, the Zionist regime's attack on Iran's diplomatic mission was essentially Iranian territory. When a statement drafted by Russia condemning the consulate attack was vetoed by the US, the UK and France, Iran was deeply disappointed, though not surprised. Those that drumbeat the loudest for upholding rule-based international order are its biggest violators. Despite this disappointing outcome at the UN, Iran still opted for a diplomatic solution. It said that it would not strike Israel if there was a ceasefire in Gaza. The arrogant Zionists and their equally arrogant Western backers assumed that Iran was not capable of striking Israel. In the past, Iran had shown a strategic restraint when its generals were murdered in Syria or its scientists in Tehran. Iran's patience was exhausted. It was time to act and do so forcefully. Its response came on the night of April 13th. Iran not only punctured the Zionist regime's myth of invincibility, it had already been seriously dented by Hamas' valiant resistance that has lasted more than 6 months, but also exposed the Zionist entity as a dependency of the Western regimes that attempt to protect it. The strike delivered a number of messages to the US, Israel, and the Arab regimes. Iran can hit any part of Israel directly and overwhelm the so-called Iron Dome. And it did, on April 13th to 14th, from its own territory without using its allies in the region. There is little that Israel could do about it. While the Zionists are huffing and puffing, if they make the mistake of attacking Iran again, there will be a very heavy price to pay. The same message has been delivered to the treacherous Arab regimes. Their concrete and glass towers will come crashing down if they continue to stay in bed with the Zionists. American bases in the region will suffer the same fate. Further, Iran can chalk off the supply of oil to world markets by blocking the Strait of Hormuz. It will cause massive damage to the economies of the US, Europe, and other countries. And there is little or nothing they can do about it.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to Have It Out with Galloway, where every week we have out the great issues of the day. As the Rolling Stones once sang, this could be the last time. By which I mean it is distinctly possible that by next week's show, the world will be engulfed in war. Certainly the region from the Atlantic Ocean to the Persian Gulf may very well be in flames. This is because, fundamentally, of the behavior of the apartheid state of Israel, the European colonial state of Israel, which for 75 years has tormented, has tortured, has murdered, displaced, and dispersed millions of Palestinian people. And Iran's long-standing and absolutely sincere conviction that it is a duty, a religious duty, a duty in humanity to stand by the Palestinian people. Make no mistake about it. If Iran did not stand with Palestine, none of what's happening, none of what's being said and threatened would be remotely the case. Iran would be courted, as it once was, as a potential ally for the West in the East. Iran would be a darling, as it once was, of the Western Empire. But Iran has never given up on the Palestinian people, even when others have. I spoke in the House of Commons yesterday. I'm trending in Twitter in the UK because, frankly, I was the only adult in the room, pointing out that the Prime Minister of Britain made a lengthy statement about the events of last weekend without a single word of condemnation or even a single word at all about the blatantly, brazenly illegal, violent, fatally violent act conducted by the apartheid state on the 1st of April in Damascus. As I said in the Parliament yesterday, not one word did the Prime Minister say about the destruction of the Iranian consulate in Damascus in violation of the Vienna Convention, in violation of all rules and laws of the United Nations Charter and of international law. And yet, obviously, the events on the 1st of April were the proximate cause, reason for the events of last weekend over in the skies over the apartheid state. But not one word was mentioned until I rose to my feet. The fact that my intervention has now been viewed by millions and millions of people, when so many dozens of people spoke, many of them much more powerful than me in terms of the positions that they hold, the fact that it is my intervention that is dominating the public discourse proves something very important. The British public are not fools. They know essentially what's going on in the Middle East and that Palestine is the heart of the matter. The massacre of 35,000 and more, most of them women and children, trapped in a cage with nowhere to run, with nowhere to hide, with no anti-aircraft potential, no aircraft, no warships, no bomb shelters. Not like the bunker that Netanyahu spent the weekend in the basement of the house of an American billionaire in Tel Aviv. The truth is, the British public and the Western public know that their governments are on the road to nowhere, making ourselves more and more hated, more and more imperiled and in danger, our interests damaged everywhere by our unending support for a tiny little country of just a few million people on the Mediterranean. We'll be discussing with the first-rate, first-line, top-class guest, Dr. Saeed Mohammed Marandi from the University of Tehran. This is Have It Out with Galloway. Professor Saeed Mohammed Marandi is the head of the American Studies Department at the University of Tehran. He's become a very familiar face and voice in Western media because he's not easy for them to dismiss. He's not easy for them to rubbish. He speaks the language. He speaks the language of wisdom, of international diplomacy, statecraft, and the language of finding solutions to problems rather than exacerbating them. I frequently have the honor of having him as a guest on my shows, and I have that honor again today. Now, very dangerous times, Professor. Welcome to the show. Will this be my last show? Is there going to be an all-out war by next week?
Well, I hope we are all able to benefit from your excellent show for a very long time. I do think it's quite possible that there will be an escalation. If the Israeli regime says they're going to target Iranians again, then if they don't do so, it would be a humiliation in itself. So I think they've put themselves in a position where they feel that they have to carry out an attack. And this is where I think the West miscalculates and misunderstands, because the West constantly believes its own propaganda. Like in Ukraine, where the Ukrainians were always winning and then suddenly everyone sees that they're losing. It's because of the Western propaganda that has for 2 years been saying that they've been wiping out the Russian armed forces, and then suddenly everyone wakes up to the reality that Kiev is under threat. In the case of Iran and the Israeli regime, the Israelis have lost in Gaza on the battlefield. They've lost on the border with Lebanon on the battlefield. They've created hatred for the regime across the globe because of the genocide. And after striking the Iranian embassy, the globe was outraged. The European countries and the United States are marginalized nowadays in the international community. They, of course, support the strike on the embassy, which is seen as outrageous, just as their support for the genocide is seen as outrageous across the globe. But their propaganda basically has been that the Israelis won when the Iranians struck back and retaliated and punished Israel for the airstrike. Whereas that is absolutely not the case. It is the opposite. The Iranians sent large numbers of very inexpensive and old drones, each costing at most $10,000. And they told the world well in advance, because the Iranians wanted to draw fire towards those drones. They wanted the Israeli regime and the Americans to throw everything they had at the drones. And that's what they did. So the Iranians spent maybe a couple of million dollars on the drones, and the Israelis spent over $1.3 billion in missiles to shoot down those drones. And they didn't get any intelligence from Iran because they were all old. And the Iranians gained a huge amount of intelligence about Israeli and U.S. capabilities. And of course, they depleted their reserves of drones, whereas Iran has endless amounts of drones and missiles. Then the Iranians fired a number of older missiles, again, no new technology, getting rid of these old missiles. They also were, like the drones, fired to draw the anti-aircraft missiles towards themselves, and they were successful as well. So these drones and those older missiles, which had, as I said, no new technology in them for the West or Israel to discover, they all fulfilled their objective. They made, they forced the other side to carry out a costly missile attack on the drones and missiles, and they gathered a huge amount of information. So they were decoys. They were all decoys. Then, to send the real message to Israel, they sent a handful, maybe 10 to 20, I'm not quite sure about the number, of missiles to an airbase in the south, where the F-35s are, which bomb Gaza and which bombed the embassy, and a military intelligence base in the north. Those drones, those missiles all got through. Even those missiles weren't Iran's latest technology. They were older missiles, but they went right through the defense, and they showed the Israeli regime, and there's footage of them. There's footage, at least a number of drones and satellite. There's footage of the drones striking and satellite pictures showing that they struck. So it was a success from the Iranian point of view. But the problem is that when the West puts out this propaganda, as usual, they believe their own propaganda. And I think that may actually help to create miscalculation. And then this time around, if the Israelis strike, which they've threatened to do, the Iranians will hit back much harder. It will not be like what we saw 2-3 days ago. The Iranians have gathered their intelligence. The number of drones and missiles will be much greater. They will not be giving days of telling everyone days before that they're going to carry out the attack. It will be a sudden counterstrike if the Israeli regime does anything. And there will be thousands instead of hundreds. So the Israeli regime will be devastated. The Iranians have promised to give a crushing response this time around. So if the Americans and the Israelis keep gloating, then they may do something very stupid, and then they'll see the reality of Iran's capabilities.
We'll explore the likely meaning of that reality in a minute, Professor. David Cameron, when asked on Sky News in the unlikely figure of Kay Burley, who became the biggest journalist in the country with this question. When Cameron was fulminating about what Iran had done in response to the attack on its embassy, he was asked by Kay Burley, well, what would Britain do if such a thing happened to one of our embassies? And he more or less said, we'd do exactly the same as Iran has done, a real parade, Professor, of hypocrisy. But let's move on from them and talk about you, talk about Iran. I think there's a very strong case for saying, as George W. Bush might have put it, that they've all misunderstood Iran. They think of Iran as some kind of, I don't know, a Victorian-era northwest frontier province. But the reality is, Iran is a real substantial military power with 41 million people of fighting age, as opposed to 3 million people of fighting age in the apartheid state. Do you think they have, that this all stems from an underestimation of Iranian capability?
Yes, I think that they forget that even after the collapse of the Soviet Union and after the U.S. victory in Kuwait over the foolish Saddam Hussein, when the United States was at the top of the world and they became what someone once called a hyperpower, and we had reached supposedly the end of history, as Fukuyama said. Back then, the United States never dared to attack Iran because Iran was much more powerful than Iraq or Afghanistan. In the 90s, they didn't do it. After they invaded Afghanistan and Iraq, they didn't do it because Iran was simply too powerful. And the ideology that dominates Iranian society, especially this the view of this religious ideology and this the way in which people in Iran view Karbala and Imam Hussein, this the Americans know that there would be they always knew that there would be many people who would stand against their aggression, and ultimately that the Americans would lose. The Iranians would be highly motivated in the defense of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And so the Americans always constantly threatened the country, but they always stood back and were careful not to enter Iranian territory. That was then, but this is now. Iran today is much more powerful. It has developed a very high-tech military industry. The West claims that Iran is assisting the Russians in and giving them advanced technology to fight their war in Ukraine. Whether it's true or false is irrelevant. The point is that they acknowledge Iran's advanced capabilities. It's advanced technology. It's advanced weapons system. The systems that have been developed indigenously. And Iran today has allies across the region. Back then, Iran was isolated. And after the Americans invaded Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan, Iran was surrounded by American bases and American soldiers. But today, Iran has allies in Iraq, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Yemen, and the U.S. allies across the region are despised because their own population, their populations are witnessing a genocide in Gaza take place in front of our eyes as we speak, but their regimes do nothing if not support the Israelis directly or indirectly carry out the genocide. So these regimes are becoming increasingly vulnerable. Those that do trade with Israel, those who do business or who have political contacts or who have military cooperation, they are losing their legitimacy in the eyes of their own people. Indeed, even in Turkey, despite the rhetoric of the president, we've seen how Turkey has continued to do business as usual with the Israeli regime, provided with fuel from the Caucasus and Central Asia, export and import goods. And where did that lead the president of Turkey, Mr. Erdogan, during the local elections? He was wiped out. Why? Because many of his supporters went and voted for other parties, both religious and secular. So those that are siding with Israel are growing weaker. Those that are siding with the resistance are growing stronger. And the resistance is not just Iran and those and its partners in Yemen and Lebanon and elsewhere. The resistance is growing across the world. The global south has turned against Israel. And we see that young people and people from all walks of life in the West have turned against Israel. Young Jews, young Christians, young Muslims, young Hindus, people from different walks of life. They are now a part of this broader resistance against genocide, against what the Brazilian president called the Holocaust, effectively. And I think that the isolation of Israel and its regional friends will increase, and the isolation of the West will increase, and that puts Iran and the resistance in a commanding position.
Indeed so. Professor Marandi, as always, thank you for that tour of the horizon. Let's go to Zebonisa Rao in London. Zebonisa, welcome.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here, and greetings to everyone. So my question is a mixture of kind of frustration, complaint, and finally a question. It's a follow-up to your last program where it was mentioned the greed of governments and the Pope being Catholic discussion. Mm-hmm. So we've witnessed a six-month-long genocide. We spent every day analyzing, assessing how will this country react, what will happen next. At the same time, logics and facts, humanity and law, they no longer exist. They don't exist for the criminals in power. We pray for a positive end to the conflict. South Africa, the Houthis and Iran, they are the only heroes in the story. So, I mean, I would pose the question, I know you've touched on it just now, that another elephant in the room is that the world governments are actually supporting basically a business plan through Israel. It's land, oil, gas, ethnic cleansing. Financial gain is their motivator, and when financial gain is involved, then human nature will not give up under any circumstance. It doesn't matter how many deaths, what kind of havoc it wreaks. This is the only fact that matters. So my complaint is that why isn't this addressed directly? And my question, the second part of it is that what if we stop working through the established channels and fitting into the required narratives, wondering why we're in the same place? The definition of a democracy, isn't that the opposite of a dictatorship? And it feels like we are under a global dictatorship. I'm sure that the people in power want to change the status quo, and they would know how to. But a major hurdle in the fact that the UN has military power that it cannot use is that the P5 member states' consensus is impossible. So the present rules that we live under are corrupt and are essentially, they're a cage for us. And they're not even being followed by Israel and the Western governments. What can the vast majority of the world who wants them changed, what can they do to change them? And there's a term.
Well, in two words, ma'am, popular power, people's power. We have to find ways to assert our popular power over the prevailing orthodoxy, which misgoverns us. And I'll come back to that, how we can do that, in a minute. But I'm one of these, and I've been, if you think about it, for more than half of my adult life, I have been sitting in the British Parliament, as I am again now. I've been a part of the debates in which this and that structure of so-called international law, of rules-based orders and all the other guff that we hear endlessly. And I concluded long ago that all of this is just lipstick on a pig. And the point about lipstick is that it can be wiped off any time. It's there for the prettification of what is essentially a pig with all its ugliness. But if necessary, the lipstick can easily be wiped off. And we are seeing that now. You see, I'm so old, I remember when Britain prided itself on being not corrupt, unlike Johnny Foreigner, who was always said to be governed by corrupt politicians, corrupt governments, had an independent civil service which served the public and not any political party, which had a police force that you could safely anticipate that if your children were in trouble, the first thing they should do is ask a policeman, that had a court system that was independent from the political process and where you could expect justice, that had a BBC, which was the gold label of international journalism, that had an armed forces that were there to defend us and had defended us for a time alone against the Nazi hordes, that we had freedom of speech, that we had a genuine democracy. All of these things, every one of the things that I have just adumbrated, is now a shadow of its former self, except where it no longer exists at all, where no one even pretends that it exists. So I don't believe we're living either under the United Nations Charter of International Law, which was the pre-1999 spoken iteration of how we live, or a rules-based international order, leaving aside who made the rules, when were they made, who was consulted about, leave all that aside. Now they're no longer even pretending to adhere to any kind of rules. They break the rules they said yesterday were the rules that everyone must apply to. The best example this week, and there's an example every week, is the failure to condemn the destruction of the Iranian embassy consulate in Damascus. So we have to build an alternative power. We have to build an alternative media, and that's what I'm trying to do with this show, with the mother of all talk shows, with my social media platforms, and so on. We have to have a new political option on the ballot paper. Again, what I'm trying to do, I'm the leader of the Workers' Party of Britain. I'm trying to give the people somewhere else better to vote than the two cheeks of the same backside of the Uni Party. And we need to be demonstrating, as millions of people have all round the Western world for more than 6 months now, in the bitter cold of winter for the most part. We need to be boycotting, divesting, taking sanctions against the biggest criminals in the international arena. We need to be educating ourselves. I tell our young people in our party, read before you think, and think before you write, speak, and act. Thank you to all our panel. I think the best show we've had so far. Thank you to Professor Marandi for his expertise. And above all, thanks to you. Have it out with Galloway.
WIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We'll welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi and Sheikh Nur Muhammad. Sheikh Nur Muhammad, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
And Sheikh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about the significance of Laylatul Qadr, the night of Qadr. Roughly translated into the night of power or something like that. We want to talk about the significance of this night, which day or night is considered to be Laylatul Qadr, and what are the recommended actions during this night. Sheikh Mahdavi, let's start with you, brother. Let's start with the naming itself, Laylatul Qadr. What is it exactly?
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم Actually, the literal translation for Laylatul Qadr is the night of Taqdir. Taqdir means to, we can interpret or explain it as measuring. So measuring the destiny
yes.
of Muslims. We believe that in that night, that very night, the destiny, the whole destiny of 1 year
yes.
for all human beings,